Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters. Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet. Yes, in your browser, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin, Mass. FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial, maybe the push buttons, the knobs. You can preset it to 102.9, so it's always ready for you. Here today, virtually, with school committee member Reese Hansen. Reese, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me today. I've been enjoying the wonderful weather. As we chatted a bit before we started, did some yard cleanup over the weekend. Still a little sore from it, but glad to have it done and feeling good about spending more time outside and moving into a more gentle season.
Yes. We still have a little bit of a roller coaster if I've been reading some of the weather reports properly, but we'll enjoy the 60s and 70s while they're here for sure.
I'll take what I can get while I get it.
Absolutely. So, and thank you for doing this for the listeners. We're going to recap the school committee meeting of March 24. Yeah, well, schedules being what it is, we will do a recap, and that's why we're here.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting meeting, and you started a different time.
Yes, we're back to seven and from to the best of my knowledge, that's when we'll be having our meetings from now on. Following this meeting, which was back at 7 to allow for the budget subcommittee to meet at 6, we had a discussion among school committee members, or less of a discussion and just giving feedback to Paul Griffith, our chair, about the timing. And ultimately, it seemed like most committee members preferred 7, that we wanted to give it a shot at 6. And as we had a few weeks, people ran into different snags. I know for me, policy, which used to meet at 6, couldn't meet at 5. So then we're trying to find times to meet otherwise. And I'm sure other members had their own realizations of the impact of that time change. So we'll be back at 7 tomorrow, though it won't be tomorrow when people are listening to this any longer. But yeah, the 14th, it will be back at 7, and my understanding is that that will be our time moving forward, unless there is anything that may change it. But I think that'll be our standard time.
Yeah, and I concur from a practical scheduling perspective, that 6 o'clock slot or even a 5:40 slot, 5 slot for kind of the subcommittee to meet before the full committee made more sense, both from even a staff perspective of the central office is sticking around. And as opposed to, okay, now finding another spot, it's another night, or early in the day, and then the schedules just get complicated. So
Yeah.
yeah, definitely. But
Absolutely.
anyway, the major piece I think for that meeting was an update from Lifelong Learning.
That's right. We got a great presentation from Lifelong Learning about what they've been working on over the past year. And we got to see some data about how they're serving our community. They've got 149 programs. There's 2,195 individuals served through their programs, which breaks down to 1,254 students and 941 adults. Now, I knew about Lifelong Learning's adult programs. I didn't realize it was nearly, I mean, roughly what, 40% of the individuals they serve, if my math isn't too far
Yeah,
off there.
that's ballpark. Yeah. No
That,
pun intended.
or, yeah, exactly. Our adults, it's great to hear how popular their programs are for adults as well. And the real diversity of things that they provide. My own kid is involved with their Glee program, and he's had a great experience there. I look forward to seeing his performance this Thursday when they have their second recital of
Oh,
this
yeah.
kind of class period.
Yep.
And so hearing about what they've been doing now, what I really appreciated about the presentation that I want to share with everyone listening is how much focus they've been putting on meeting community needs, and particularly through solutions. And I think solutions is something that I've heard from other parents has been both a great service, but also kind of frustrating that it's hard to get into. And one of the things we learned through the presentation is that that the reputation for being hard to get into may be bigger than the actual reality of it being hard to get into. Now, they do have a wait list, but the current wait list for Lincoln is 16 long, or at least was as of the meeting
That
time.
time, yeah.
And at Washington, it was 10. Meanwhile, the enrollment started on February 9th, and they said that everybody who had been waitlisted in the month of February, they were able to accommodate. And they did this by, trying to expand, expand the program through adding additional staff, which is one of the real limiting factors. They also separated the kindergarten out, which gave them a little bit more flexibility in accommodating people. And then even one-on-one conversations with families where someone signs up for 5 weeks and they'll give them a call and say, this 5 week sign up is yours. But if you signed up for 5 weeks and that's not your need anymore, we'll adjust it, adjust the tuition. That opens up ways to accommodate other families as well. So a lot of work, a lot of, contact hours and, reaching out to those families takes time, but they're doing it to try to accommodate as all the families that want to be in. So while, yes, the wait lists do exist, it is not as dire as it has a reputation for. And you don't necessarily need to be online the second that it goes live in order to get into solutions. Like I said, at the time of the presentation, anyone who signed up in February got in. So that was that's great to hear. And hopefully at this point, a few more of those families are off the wait list now and are know what their child care plan is for next year. The other thing that lifelong learning has been working on is what they've been calling little solutions, which is an initiative to try to serve teaching staff that have essentially, pre-K students, so too young for ECTC, with a daycare option. And this is an initiative that's starting with 9 slots, and they have some interest. They heard from five staff members already, and as of May 1st, any remaining slots will be offered to town employees. And this is an initiative that is ideally, one, expanding what a lifelong learning can offer in a self-sustaining way, where the tuition will go towards the cost of that program, and hopefully will be a really worthwhile retention effort in terms of this is something that can help teachers that we want to keep in districts stay in district after they, have a young one and need to meet these child care needs. If there is child care available that is nearby and during school hours, that's a pretty direct way to meet that need. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it grows. I think it's a great initiative, and I'm hoping that as as people make use of it, word spreads through the staff that this will be something that eventually reaches a point where we can meet the needs of all the teachers that want it, maybe even some of the town staff, maybe even all the town staff. But for now, it's one session with up to 9 kids. And yeah, we'll look forward to hearing an update about that. So yeah, it was a great, concise presentation. I think those are the major bullet points, the things that I want to make sure people who didn't tune in can know about. Otherwise, it was a relatively short meeting for those we usually have. We had only a couple things to vote on. We got an update on how the district has been handling its obligations under the Student Opportunity Act, and voted to approve their plan along theirs. And then the other initiative that the school committee's been involved with is a joint effort with the town council, trying to bring together different town departments to do strategic planning together. Our town manager, Jamie Helen, shared at a joint meeting between the school committee and the town council in March that there was funding that was earmarked for this kind of consultation. So this is something that we would be able to access without impacting the budget that is, the talk of the town at the moment, of course.
Right.
And so we did our part by approving the statement of interest, which will allow the town to start receiving bids from interested parties, and we'll be coming back together to discuss our impressions of the different offers that we receive and make a plan for moving forward, whether it is to hire one of the consultants that reach out, or if the case is that we don't feel confident that they can meet our needs, then what next? I'm of course hopeful that we do have offers that do seem capable of meeting our needs.
Yes.
That is a more direct path forward, but we'll see what we get.
Agreed. Yeah, I would add slightly to the School Opportunity Act, because this is one of those kind of hidden, almost unfunded mandates that came out of the passage of Student Opportunity Act, requiring an additional report in addition to what we were already doing on the impact of Student Opportunity Act and what it was allowing us. And we were relatively unique because we're a held harmless community to begin with, how the funding was being utilized, et cetera. So all things said, I think this is either the last one or the next to last one. So we're almost done.
Yes, the period is ending. I am uncertain if we are, if we're liable for one more report. I believe we are,
Yeah, I think that's the way you phrase. That's where I remember. But yeah, either here or there, it's a relatively minor inconvenience anyway at this point. But the more important one in terms of the strategic plan, yeah, in other forums I've advocated that while we have a bunch of plans together, i.e., master plan, the housing production plan, open space and recreation plan. The Housing for All, the Franklin for All, which predated the master plan. We've got all of these, but we have the strategic budget issue that really needs to be addressed in terms of, okay, if we've got this and that means we can't do some things, how do we put the two together so we can do something that actually will help the budget? And respectfully, as good of the minds are amongst the joint budget subcommittee and the three parties involved, you still need kind of that facilitator to lead some of those hard discussions. Because having been in many strategic planning sessions in the corporate world and even nonprofit world, those need to be hard discussions, but they need to be facilitated in order to get to an actionable piece coming out of it. So I endorse the attempt. I hope somebody truly does step up because we need to do it, and the opportunity is now. So, yeah.
I absolutely agree. And I'm looking forward to working with the town council on these efforts and all the other involved parties here in town. And you're right, they are hard discussions, and we're facing hard realities, and getting help really, like you mentioned the master plan. Well, how do we take what's in the master plan and make it reality when we're facing these budgetary concerns? So this will hopefully give us a very actionable path forward, and a path towards relieving some of the financial stress that the town's been under.
Right, definitely. Good. And then I think you also wanted to elaborate a little bit on, because you're involved in a couple of subcommittees or a liaison to a couple of other groups, school related, that is doing some interesting
Absolutely.
work.
Yeah, I wanted to share a little bit about both, because these are things that I think are easy to kind of be blind to, that we've got our main committee meetings that are aired every other week, or 3 weeks in this case, but whenever we have them. But we've also got a bunch of subcommittees, and actually I think last time we met, those subcommittees had just been announced, the assignments. So
Time, I
I feel like I
believe.
remember talking about this with you last time. Now there a few months have gone by. I've had an opportunity to work with my specific groups, which are not specifically subcommittees. I am just the one school committee representative on them, as well as the actual subcommittees. So I just wanted to give a brief overview, share what we're doing. So the first one I'll talk about is Student Wellness Advisory Committee, or SWAC for short, SWAC. And this is a group of staff in the schools, community members, and myself as the school committee representative that get together not quite once a month, more, I think it's 5 or 6 times per school year is what we target. And we come together and we talk about policy to help guide general wellness in the schools as it applies to nutrition and physical health and physical activity. We also care about mental health, but we've got another group that's focused on that, which I'll get to in a bit. So prior to my own involvement in SWAC, they had done a lot of work establishing strong policy to help guide initiatives in school around nutrition. And to that extent, Colin, our operations director, I think that's his title. Forgive me if I got that wrong.
No, the operations director. Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay. And Aaron, who runs our food services, they are involved in the group, and they've done a lot of work making sure that our students have nutritionally sound meals with including locally sourced ingredients. There's a presentation before the at the meeting before the one I just spoke about where they got into that. And so a lot of that kind of thinking happened certainly between the two of them in their own work days, but also through their memberships in SWAC, in establishing those kinds of policies. We, along the lines of nutrition, we also collaborate with the food pantry, and there are staff from the food pantry that are members of SWAC that work to meet student nutritional needs outside of the school day. And this is where conversations are had about things like the backpack program, and thinking about how do we make sure we're meeting the needs of all the students that we can be. One of the and an example of this is that one of the trends that they had noticed was that at the elementary level, students are taking advantage of the backpack program, and it falls off sharply at the middle school level. And then once they get to high school, that there I don't think there are any students getting backpacks. And we were thinking about different reasons that this change may happen, and what actions can be taken to bridge that gap, in order to make sure that the students who need these resources are still able to access them, even with the environmental changes of middle and high school, which are not just things like they don't have a specific classroom they're in any longer, but also, pardon, something fell in my office, but also the like there are certain social things where some students would not share with their friends that they're part of the backpack program, and then therefore do not go get their backpacks because they're with their friends after school. So looking at things like delivery services or having older siblings get their food through a delivery to a younger sibling who's still in elementary school, for example. And one of the great things has been seeing all of the really wonderful work that's been done before I joined, and now getting to be part of bringing that forward. And that's kind of like the nutritional subcommittee of the group. The other side works on initiatives to increase opportunities for physical movement during the day, both for the wellness of our teachers, as well as making sure our students have opportunities to get up and move around during their classes so that it's not 45 to 60 minutes out of clip sitting in one place and then scrambling to the next class and then being sedentary again.
Right.
And they've established some what I hope are worthwhile guidelines for teachers to try to implement these kinds of things in their classrooms. Ultimately, everything that the group does is not necessarily binding, but more kind of meant to give guidance. And so next year, what is an exciting change that I'm looking forward to, and our next meeting will be about how to implement this, is that we want to take a meeting in each individual school to be more readily accessible to the teachers and staff in that school who maybe can't attend a general SWAC meeting, but could attend one that is where they're
Oh,
going to be anyway,
yeah.
and hear from them about whether they've found these policies useful or not, whether they've found barriers to enacting the policy. And for people who have found pretty successful techniques that they've used, serve as a means of communication to spread those methods and facilitate some communication between different schools and teachers, and maybe by communicating with principals who can then put it in their communications to the staff and so forth. Highlighting different things that are being done at different schools, for example. So I'm really looking forward to being to the group being directly accessible to teachers and school staff in that way, and having a chance to see how this policy is or is not helpful in each individual school and make changes accordingly. But it's been a really it's been a good group to be a part of, and we are wrapping up for the year. I think our last meeting is in May. I don't remember the exact date at the moment, but we'll be determining at that point what that what next year's plan is, solidifying what the next year's plan is going to be.
Yeah, location, 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 I think is an adage I've heard in many other locate areas as well, but having the meeting at the schools should help for those teachers that, if their after school time permits, to just drop in for something like that, to provide the feedback, the opportunity, that's going to be priceless, I think, for those that do so. So it certainly is much more accessible in that way, as opposed to even having the meeting in their schedule, but you know, you got to go to central office or some other building. Having it right there makes it so much convenient, more convenient. So
Yeah,
let's see how it
absolutely.
goes, I hope.
I'll come back and tell you about it sometime next year.
Sure.
So then there's also the mental health and wellness task force. I think I got the name right, but
That sounds familiar.
this is the corollary group where we're focused on mental health. And again, I joined at a time where their work was already well underway. And they'd been focused on addressing a problem in Franklin, which was something I'm aware of. I think everyone is aware of, but even in my role as a social worker, I didn't know quite how common this experience is of of students meeting adults that they've met online and essentially being transported by online predators, essentially, and talking about how do we communicate with students about these risk factors? How do we communicate with families about these risk factors? How do we make sure students know where they can turn if they need help? Where can students turn if this is going on and they can't turn to their parents because their parents will yell at them or something like that? Or there's shame or fear or something like that. How do we get this messaging out and help both parents and students understand the risk and also how common it is that Sergeant Crossman, I think that's his name. Is that Connors
Connor
Crossman?
Crossman.
It is Connor. Okay, thank you. He's our he's our oh my gosh, what's
School
Thank you,
resource
school resource
officer.
officer. Drew a blank on the title.
That's
School
okay.
resource officer at the high school had shared that our the Franklin police get calls about this kind of issue at least weekly and sometimes daily. That this kind of thing happens much more frequently than I think most of us realize. And helping parents understand that this is not something abstract that happens to other people, but this is something that happens in Franklin, and something that pretty much any youth that's on the internet, there's that risk factor is there. And at this last meeting, I had reached out to Jennifer Knight Levine, who works at Safe Coalition and was one of the founders of Safe Coalition. And she came in just a wealth of information.
She's a
And
dynamo.
I mean, she's just phenomenal. The work they do there is phenomenal. And what I didn't expect was when I reached out, is her response was that, like, oh yeah, Safe Coalition is the kind of the number one source for working with these kinds of incidents in terms of helping the families and working with mental health. And I said to her, oh, I usually think of Safe Coalition as more substance abuse focused. And she's like, well, they're kind of one in the same. And you know, there's not perfect overlap in terms of that diagram, but what she d explained was that often the people who are predators can also build trust by being dealers for young people. And that these relationships start as dealer relationships and then intensify from there. And that's where that risk comes from. And that's why you know, why Safe is so involved. So I'll thank her here again for coming to the meeting to talk about their experience, and particularly sharing what's worked for them and what hasn't in terms of communicating with families. Because when we're thinking about our own messaging, that kind of experience is invaluable in terms of how we can effectively present this to students and parents and help them understand how to keep this communication open.
Yeah, they've from their birth a few years ago, I think they're now actually they're celebrating their 10th year. Rapidly, it's been 10 years, incredible. From a small start, now they've branched out. Not so much expanding services, but listening to the community needs is really kind of their trademark. And then if they can play in that space, and as things are like this, where one thing's related to another, so if you go down to kind of the root cause of it, if they can affect somebody there, by all means. So they have an extensive number of services. Their website, safecoalitionma.org. If people are not aware of it, they've got an 800 number to call anytime somebody picks up. They've got a variety of programs, including, I believe, the peer-to-peer group at the high school is still very active. And that'll be one of their key pieces, I would think, in terms of both two-way communication, talking to those students and then getting the info out through those students to the others. Jen's marvelous, the entire group. I've been fortunate to talk with them a few times, and they're an easy talk because they always have great info.
Yeah, very much. I had an opportunity to visit their office over in Moseley Mills here in Franklin, and it's just a phenomenal space with like, you know, they've done such a nice job setting up a really comfortable place there with a lot of different, you know, offices for private meetings and also bigger spaces to just kind of foster community and ultimately kind of bring it back to their name, provide a safe place for people to be. And I just so appreciate the work they do. I appreciate Jen for coming out to the meeting and sharing all that information with us. Like I said, it'll be great next time we meet to take that into consideration as we plan out our next action items. So before we wrap up, Steve, I wanted to, just touch upon the two subcommittees I've been part of as well, share
Sure.
some brief updates there. Over in policy, which I will say has been a really interesting and enjoyable group to be part of. We've been taking a look at developing policy around facility rentals among our schools, trying to support our administrators in crafting sound policy that creates opportunities for people to use the space, opportunities for the school to benefit from those rental fees, but also provides some clear guidelines about, what kind of things we don't want in the school space, and how do we protect our school spaces at the same time. And so carefully crafting policy around kind of tiered access, who gets priority to renting this space, and defining the kinds of the activities that just wouldn't be appropriate to host in a school building. And then beyond that, we've also been developing policy related to a really cool project that's happening that I don't know how many people are aware of. Certainly, I think some of the booster groups here in town are aware of it, but we're looking at establishing a monument of sorts, a big sign. But the concept is the concept is very beautiful, and I look forward to seeing it come to life. Of essentially a sign that celebrates the champions that we have here in Franklin, and the
There's
challenge
so many.
there are so many, and it's a good
That's a
problem to
happy
have.
problem for sure.
And one of the challenges we are facing is how do we clearly define who goes on the sign and who and what groups are celebrated in other spaces, in a way that's fair and equitable. And also, how do we do this with, in a way that's sustainable, in a way that doesn't introduce unanticipated costs to the school budget? And so the plan right now is that this initiative is entirely outside the budget. I guess beyond the staff hours that are needed as so, get the signs up for our champions, there'll be a little bit of work there. But in terms of the money that goes into the production of the sign, that all will hopefully be coming through booster groups and other kinds of fundraising. If you've got a student athlete or a rising student athlete just want to celebrate the champions here in Franklin, keep an eye out for those opportunities to contribute to those efforts. Because that I think is going to be a really cool thing, and as our su superintendent Jaguer says, he imagines the teams coming up Panther Way and being met with this massive sign of all the champions we have here in Franklin, and maybe give them an opportunity to turn that bus around before they have to face our champions here. But yeah, it's a really exciting initiative. The other exciting project is the other subcommittee I've been working on, which is the Horace Mann Legacy Subcommittee. And this is kind of just getting ramped up at the moment. But we are looking to really define how we celebrate Horace Mann and how we carry forth his legacy beyond just putting his name on a building or putting his picture somewhere, which I think are also very valuable things. But Horace Mann really defined what public education is here in the US, and it's important that we carry that forth, especially here in Franklin. So to that extent, it is a big storytelling and public education effort to raise awareness of what he stood for. And it is getting kicked off with an event on well near his birthday. It's not his exact birthday, but that's going to be May 3rd at the Historical Museum. There's going to be a kind of birthday party for Horace Mann, and that is also going to serve as the kickoff event for the efforts of this subcommittee. What's very cool about this subcommittee is that it's much closer to the other groups that I'm part of, the SWAC and Mental Health Task Force, in that it brings together staff, community members, and committee members, more so than like policy, which is, the three of us and the
Just
staff.
straightforward, yeah.
We put out a request for interest, and I think, I don't know if it was Dave Callahan or Ruth Ann's idea, but one of them had said, "Why don't we just bring them all in? Like, why are we limiting ourselves to?" I think it was 12 was the initial idea, and a big part of that was that there were so much interest from a diverse skill set. We didn't want to say no. We didn't like, if we got 20 teachers, like, okay, maybe we don't need that similar perspective. But we got such a diverse set of skills and perspectives, and the enthusiasm is just so high. We don't want to say no. And it just didn't seem like there was a reason to say no. Like, all hands on deck, let's do this. And it's great to see the energy around it. And we are now working on kind of separating into subgroups, each tackling a different aspect of these efforts. And I can't wait to see what comes of it. And in a few weeks, that it'll be a great event over at the Historical Museum. So thank you out there to everybody who gave that interest, and that we've started working together. I'm looking forward to doing more of that work with you. And keep an
Yeah,
eye out for those Horace Mann events.
absolutely. At some point in time, there'll be Horace all year or something like that is one of the themes that seems to have gotten some legs to it. And I think, given my understanding of him, he's got such a varied background. Yes, clearly he is the father of education, public education, but he's done so many other things too that people aren't necessarily generally aware of. So, yeah, there's an opportunity there to, on the one hand, honor him truly here in his birthplace, but then create the education around it, and then continue to mark him at some key points during the year for other accomplishments. So yeah, that's all good. It's all
Yeah,
good.
absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. And my impulse is to start talking about all those diverse experiences.
These are
But
teasers, teasers.
yes, we will get to it. I mean, part of it has been like I'm essentially educating myself on Horace Mann
Of
and
course.
doing like research project kind
Yep.
of things, and getting those primary documents, and making sure we have the information we need to be effective communicators of work that you did.
Yeah. And it does take some time. I read two books recently, and yeah, that has certainly helped me informed me, but I clearly it's just two books. So two authors' views is not necessarily the wholeness of the man. So there's more things to do by all means. And then now I'll have the committee to help foster that. So,
That's exactly
that's
right. That's what we're hoping.
Yes. Well, thank you for taking time to do this.
Thank you so much for taking the time as well, Steve. It's always great to talk with you, and I'll look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.